The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
She remains one of the most recognizable and fascinating figures of the 20th century, a Hollywood icon whose image has endured for generations, but whose real life was far more complex than the blonde bombshell persona the world came to know. As the world marks what would have been Marilyn Monroe's 100th birthday, my next guest has spent years exploring the woman behind the myth. Best-selling author and biographer Michelle Morgan joins us now to talk about Marilyn's life and her legacy and why the world remains so fascinated by her a century after her birth. Michelle, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Tell me, when did your fascination with Marilyn begin?
It was 1985 and I was 15 years old, and she'd sort of been on my radar, of course, because, you know, she was Marilyn and she was everywhere. But I was on holiday with my family and I saw a picture of her and I just couldn't get it out of my mind. And then that evening I said, I think I'm going to buy a book about her just so I can read it on the beach. And I did read it on the beach. And then the rest is history. I was completely hooked from the moment I started to learn about her life.
Why do you think we remain so fascinated by her?
Do you know, I really don't know. This is the number one question that I get asked. And every single time I answer it, I say something different. And I think that there lies the clue that I have no idea why everyone is so fascinated by her, other than it's very different for every single person. You know, some people just love the way she looked on camera. Other people love the way that she was so strong and she tried to do her best and she tried to learn and she never stopped learning and, you know, and going after her dreams and things like that. So it's quite a mystery as to why her memory is still so alive in everybody's minds, except that, you know, she's something different for everybody.
Now, the kind of roles she played, actually, we'll give our listeners a sample. Marilyn singing Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend.
A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat or help you at the automat.
So that was Marilyn, and that's how people remember her, that kind of high singing voice and, you know, whimsical, but not very deep as a personality. You would say that is not the real Marilyn.
Yeah, I mean, that was a character that she was playing. You know, Lorelei Lee, who she played in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, is a character. And this has always been quite a mystery to me as to why people think that Marilyn was the people she played. You know, nobody thinks that Arnie is really the Terminator. Nobody thinks that Johnny Depp is really a pirate. And yet everybody thinks that Marilyn is a dumb blonde. And that's because of some of the parts she played. And actually, quite a few of the parts she played, although they were advertised as being dumb blondes, they were actually quite wily and, you know, and funny and sneaky in some ways. And so, you know, they were characters. It wasn't who she was at all. And I think it says more for everybody else than
it does about
Marilyn.
But she did in life also kind of keep with the character. This is her when she's singing a very important man a happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you.
So that's Marilyn singing happy birthday to JFK, but kind of staying in character.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, it was just a performance. It was something that she was putting on. The same as any other singer who goes on stage. You know, Robbie Williams puts on a performance when he's on stage. That's a completely different person on stage to who as he is in real life. It's, you know, she was an actress. She was a singer. She was a performer and an entertainer. And in real life, she was very different.
Now, talk to me about the real life, because her childhood was troubled. There's no question about that. And it kind of, you know, the expression, the child is father to the man. well, in the, mm-hmm. this case, the child is mother to the Marilyn to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she wasn't an orphan, but she was raised that way. She had a mother who had problems, emotional, mental problems, and she had an absent father. So she was raised in foster homes and an orphanage. She was also sort of part of an arranged marriage when she was 16 because she didn't want to go back into the orphanage again. So, yeah, all of those things stayed with her during her life. You know, there was a lot of trauma in her childhood, and it wasn't very secure, and at times it wasn't very safe. So all of those things played a part in who she became, just as, you know, with everybody else. Everyone has trauma in their lives that has molded them in some way.
Now, she became fairly successful fairly quickly, and then, of course, became massive. To what extent did she have control over the roles she played in the films she starred in?
At first, she didn't have any control at all. You know, she was a contract player. They would put her in all sorts of different movies that sometimes she hadn't even seen the script for before she arrived on set for the first day. And then it came to sort of 1953, and she was starting to question things, and they wanted to put her into a film that she didn't appreciate. She'd heard about it, but she didn't like the idea of the character. They wouldn't show her the script, and she just thought, you know what, I think I'm going to take this a bit more seriously, and I'm going to say no. And the studio hated that, and they suspended her and everything else, but she really stuck to her guns and said, no, I want a part to play that I actually want to play, such as the girl in The 7 Year Itch or Cherie in Bus Stop. She wanted to play those roles, and she fought for those roles, whereas before, in the very, very beginning, she was just put into anything that they wanted her to play in.
She had the reputation, which has come down the years, whether it was really true or not, of being difficult on set. Was she?
Yes. I'm a big fan of Marilyn's, but I will always have to say that, yes, she could be very difficult on set for many reasons. One, because she always had a drama coach with her on set, and she would often take their direction over the director's direction, which was never appreciated. And also because she suffered greatly from nerves and anxiety, and it would take her sometimes hours to come out of her dressing room. I've spoke to many people who worked with her over the years, and for instance, when she was in England making The Prince and the Showgirl, you know, I spoke to people who said that she would keep them waiting for hours because she just couldn't come out of her trailer because of her anxieties and things. But once she was on the set, she would do a magnificent job, and as you can see from the finished products.
Now, her real name was Norma Jean, and that was immortalised, I suppose, in the song Candle in the Wind by Elton John mm-hmm. and Bernie Taupin, who wrote the lyric. How much do you think that particular song has contributed to the enduring legacy?
I think that it has contributed. It's a wonderful song. I love it. I discovered it when I first became a Marilyn fan. I didn't know it before then. I think that, you know, it's Run and Run, and or if you look on YouTube, you know, there'll always be somebody uploading that song together with some Marilyn videos and, you know, things, pictures and things like that. So, it has really helped. And it's a beautiful song.
Talk to me about her choice of men, because she was associated with rather famous and celebrated men in different genres. I mean, the baseball, literature, politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she went out with Joe DiMaggio and married Joe DiMaggio. She went out with him for a couple of years, and then their marriage sadly wasn't what she expected it to be, but they remained friends for the rest of her life. And then she married Arthur Miller in 1956, who, of course, was a very famous playwright. And I think, I mean, there's a big discussion always with fans, you know, who is the best husband? But I think that while Arthur Miller did have his problems, I think that he was very well suited to her. He, you know, he really sort of shone the torch for her career. He believed in her as a serious actress, and he shared, you know, work with her. He obviously wrote The Misfits for her, things like that. But sadly, the marriage broke down in the end. But I do think that in the beginning, at least, they were very well suited to each other.
Because it's always portrayed as kind of this geeky writer and this very glamorous blonde and how ill-suited they were. But you can think of people like Sophia Loren, who married Carlo Ponti, the producer, and they did not seem to sit well together as a couple, but obviously they were mad about each other. That marriage lasted a long, long time. I have a clip I want to play for you of Marilyn in an interview reflecting on the limited view that people have of her and the perception, as we've been talking about, that she was merely a dumb blonde.
You know, it's interesting that people associate, if you happen to have blonde hair, you know, naturally or not naturally, however, or if you're not out of shape in some way, you're absolutely dumb. I mean, you're considered dumb. I don't know why that is. I think it's a very limited view.
A limited view, but a view that is still perpetrated sometimes to this day, that if someone is sort of glamorous and beautiful, that they must be dumb.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I see this with Pamela Anderson. You know, people treat her that way sometimes, and she's very intelligent and wonderful actress. But I mean, like I said before, it says more about them than it does about the actual person. You know, nobody can look at somebody who's blonde and go, well, she must be dumb just because she's got blonde hair. And if they do think that, then they've got to give their head a wobble and have a word with themselves.
Now, recently, in recent years, not today or yesterday, but perhaps a couple of years ago, we saw the trial of Harvey Weinstein for various sexual offences, and it appeared the casting couch was alive and well. I presume it was even more active back in Marilyn's day.
Yes, it was. And actually, Marilyn spoke out about it, which was, you know, a very brave thing to do in the 1950s. She did an article called The Wolves I Have Known, where she talked about different wolves in Hollywood and how they would try and, you know, get her into an office on their own and things like that. And she spoke about one director who invited her for a trip on his yacht. And she said, oh, well, I'd love that. I'd love to come and meet your wife. And then that did not go down well. So, yes, it was very much a thing. And I, you know, I've done a lot of research into the way that actresses were treated back then. And frankly, it was a disgrace.
And the role for which I suppose I will remember her, it's one of my favorite movies, is Some Like It Hot. And I'm not sure how happy the relations were on set with her two leading men.
Well, Tony Curtis absolutely did not like her at all. And I think the feeling was mutual. He said that kissing her was like kissing Hitler, which I think was a terrible thing to say. But luckily, Marilyn was still alive when he said it, and she was able to reply to it. Jack Lemmon was respectful for her. He wouldn't get angry with her. He would get frustrated, but he did speak nicely about her for the rest of his life. She was difficult on that set. She was pregnant at the time too, which didn't help. But you know, everybody would agree, even the director Billy Wilder, who said at the time, I'll never work with her again. Even he afterwards was like, oh, well, actually, maybe I will, because this was spectacular. You know, and he actually said, you know, you could put my auntie into a film and she would be, you know, she would remember all her lines and everything, but she wouldn't be Marilyn Monroe. So they came to the realization that it was actually worth it.
Well, she had a tragic end, and obviously throughout her life she had difficulties with addictions of various kinds, and her end tragic. So many conspiracy theories, which we don't want to contribute to in any way, a very sad, short life, I think.
Yes, it's very tragic. And I'm 56 now, so I'm 20 years older than she was when she died. And I honestly think that my life didn't start until that kind of an age, and I, in many ways, it still feels as though I'm just at the beginning of my career and my life and everything. So to pass away at the age of 36 is an absolute tragedy. It's the same with Princess Diana, exactly the same age. But you know, we just have to look at the positives, look what she left behind and how wonderful it was, and everything else. And it's very, very sad, but, you know, let's celebrate her and celebrate everything that she achieved in the 36 years she had.
She would have been 100 tomorrow. Michelle Morgan, best-selling historical novelist and Marilyn Monroe biographer, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.